Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Nothing to Fear, and welcome new listeners if you are joining us for the first time. This is a weekly horror movie podcast. Each week on the show, myself and two friends talk about a different horror movie. My name is Billy Schultz, and I'm joined, as always and as ever, by Luke Mason and Alex Wan, and we'll get on to the movie we're discussing in a minute, but I want to do a little check-in with my friends, starting with you, Luke. How you doing, bud?
Good. Yeah. It's certainly less smoky here than other places on the podcast, so gotta count the blessings. I mean, we'll probably get it in July, but
you know, also, if you say you don't have any smoke, historically speaking, if you say a week later, you're gonna get a bunch of smoke, so.
Correlation is causation.
Well, I mean, everyone who says that ends up dead, so, you know.
That's right. That's true. Yeah.
Are you getting any of the Alberta smoke at all, or is it the winds are, like, completely in the wrong way?
No, like, we're getting some smoke, but I don't know if it's from Alberta. Like, there's fires in northern BC, too.
Oh, sure. The air quality in Colorado, where Amy is actually also really bad, because it's, like, the wind is blowing straight down the Rockies, basically. So it's, like, Colorado smoked out. We have it here in Montreal. So, yeah. Yay, fire season. But, of course, we're referencing the fires in Alberta, where Alex is. You're live on the scene, Alex. How you doing in smoky Alberta?
I got it. Oh, no. It's so... yeah, it's pretty bad. Yeah, it was... sky... I don't know if you saw pictures, but sky was, like, yellow on Tuesday.
Yeah. It looks like friggin' Dune.
It did look like Dune, yeah. Just hanging out here on... Arrakis? Arrakis?
Arrakis, yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Next week, it's Arrakis.
Yeah. But yeah, we're okay. It was a little better on Friday, and then it got really bad yesterday. And now it's a little better, so I am going to guess it's going to get worse again later on today or tomorrow. But we're going to get some rain this week, I think, so that'll be nice.
Yes, hopefully that gives you all a little bit of a break. I'm doing well out here in Montreal. Officially, since the last time we went to record, I finished my final deferred project for school, so I'm done until September, and boy, oh boy, do I feel great. I'm so glad to be finished, and I'm glad to be sitting here and talking to you about a horror movie. So all this month, we've been working through some of the top five phobias, or all the top five phobias. And this week, we have come up against acrophobia, which is the fear of heights. And for that movie, I chose 2022's Fall. So had either of you heard much about this movie before we watched it?
No, I haven't heard about it. I haven't seen it before until this week. But, you know, it was pretty easy to assume what it was about based off of your pick of this week and the phobia attached to it and the movie poster. Yeah, that's it.
It's pretty much what you're getting on the tin.
Yeah, it's exactly it's the dead dove egg.
Yeah. Do not eat. Luke, did you know about this one before I picked it?
Yeah, I'd heard of it. Seen a poster or something on the internet about it. Don't know, like, where, but it had come across, and I knew it was, like, about a TV tower. So
yeah. I remember one of the pieces I heard about it was that they shot it in IMAX, like, with IMAX cameras. So just to get a sense of the scale, and we can sort of get into how the scale looks in a little bit, but don't really know. I didn't know anything about it before watching it, and as soon as the movie started, it made me think of that story that they tell about James Cameron pitching Aliens to the movie directors, where he goes in and there's the word alien written on a chalkboard, and then he just puts an S on the end and draws a dollar sign through it. And that's like, that was, I don't know if it's apocryphal or not, but I imagine somebody went in this room and wrote the word dissent and then erased the DE and just wrote ascent? Question mark? Because that's what I kind of thought this movie was, but maybe with less, like, cave goblins. But an opposite to going deep underground would be climbing way tall up it. So I can't wait to... climbing way tall up it. 3 years of podcasting, still nailing it.
Way up it.
Climbing way tall up it. But yeah, I don't really have much more to say in the way of it. It's very much what is on the poster is what you get. So in terms of does the dog die, trigger warnings, there's a little bit of blood. There's a lot of vertigo-inducing scenes. If you're even the littlest bit squeamish of heights, I would say this movie does a pretty good job of translating that fear onto the screen. And so go in knowing that. But otherwise, this is a really teeny tiny movie. It's like a shoestring cast. It was one location. Somehow they got Jeffrey Dean Morgan money for this the role, one of the roles in this film. And yeah, that's pretty much it. There's really not much to talk into. So I think we should get into the trailer and we'll get Alex's world famous synopsis right after that.
Horrible thing happened to you. I just want you to be able to move on with your life.
Come here.
It's coming up on a year. I have something that's planned, and I need a partner in crime. The B67 TV tower.
I haven't climbed since...
Becky, if you don't confront your fears, you are always going to be afraid.
Let's do it. Let's climb your stupid tower.
Oh, I'm so excited!
I was really ripped.
You're awesome. That is the Becky that we need for this trip.
This is sick.
Damn it, Hunter. What are you getting us into?
Okay, so just stay behind me, one rung at a time. See? It's easy. You're doing great. Becky, you gotta come up here. Hey, trust me. What was that? Oh my God! Oh my God! That's... Hunter, how do we get down? I don't have a signal.
Water is out there in that bag.
We have 50 feet of rope. I think I can drop myself lower. Okay, I'm gonna jump onto the bag.
Hunter, no! Hunter!
Fall is a 2022 survivor thriller film directed and co-written by Scott Mann and Jonathan Frank, starring Grace Carolyn Curry, Virginia Gardner, Mason Gooding, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan. The film follows two women who climb a 2,000-foot, or 610-meter, tall television broadcasting tower before becoming stranded at the top.
Mm-hmm. So this movie had a budget of $3 million. I gotta assume a lot of that is Jeffrey Dean Morgan's price tag. But it pulled in $21 million at the box office, almost $22 million. Rotten Tomatoes has a 79% for this one, and IMDb is where all movies on IMDb are, in the 6 range with a 6.4. So, Fall, who wants to go first with their initial takes on this movie?
I'll go.
Go for it, Alex. Go for it.
Yeah, this movie's too long. It's way too long for what it is.
Sure.
I think that's probably my bigger complaint about it.
What's 110 minutes or something? Or 100 minutes or something? Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. It was like an hour 45. So unless you're really good at capturing your audience in that one area, you know, because this movie is set pretty much just at the top of this TV tower, mm-hmm. you're going to get some boredom, which, you know, I got a little bit bored of it because it was too long, because there was no change of setting. So it tried to be 127 hours, not as good, not sure, as well. Yeah. Yeah, the story was pretty mediocre. The acting was I think the acting for when people are scared was pretty good, mm-hmm. but all the other acting was like pretty lame.
Yeah,
yeah. And this movie is the definition of why did you do that, character?
why character? Yeah. Why? Yeah.
Why did you do that? But I will say I am scared of heights. I think the part of the movie where they're actually climbing up the tower and there's like lots of, I think it was shot very well.
Yes.
The camera angles. I was terrified that entire time they were climbing up. I was like, stop looking down.
Yeah.
I don't want to look down. And it did really capture the feel of a fear of heights, because was acrophobia?
That's the one. Yep.
Cause I was really, really scared for all the parts where
when they're up there, when they're hanging when they're off the edge of it. Yeah, just
it's not rational, but like my fear of heights is what if this thing I'm standing on that's so high up is to break and I were to fall down, which is the entire premise of this plot. So even though this movie wasn't that great, it's kind of lame, the story and the characters. I legitimately was scared for a lot of this movie. So there's my take.
There's your take. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you that the story behind what if two people climbed up a really tall thing and got stuck was a little bit pat. It was a little bit like, okay, we need to, it felt, not to spoil something for later, but it felt like shoehorned in or maybe shoe shoved in a little bit awkwardly. Yeah.
Shoe gutted in.
Shoe gutted in. That, yeah, these two friends needed a reason to climb up a tower. And then, oh, what if when they're up there, guards were dropped and they became vulnerable and they really spoke about what was going on. And, you know, it's like a story of healing from trauma and healing from loss. And it was a little bit clunkily done, but the thing that really saved the movie watching experience for me was how well those shots looked. That's just how high up things were. The shots of the drones, the shots of people clinging onto rusty ladders, and just my palms are getting a little bit sweaty. My knees are fine, by the way. They're not weak at all, but my palms are getting a little bit sweaty just recounting it, just remembering it. And when Kelly and I were watching it, it was just like, we were sweating, like terror sweats, as the people are climbing this. And I think that's something they did a really good job to capitalize on. But everything else, you're right, it is a little bit too long. The twists and turns of the emotional storylines were pretty well telegraphed, and I saw everything coming. But this movie does have a pretty big twist that I was surprised for, and I actually didn't see coming. We'll talk about that later. But Luke, your first thoughts, please and thank you.
Well, of all the movies we've done this month so far, this one is the best at inducing the phobia in the audience watching it, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
Cujo, Copycat, and Taking of Deborah Logan, like, you can kind of see why the characters in the movie might be feeling the way that they're feeling based on the phobias, but it's not like I'm scared of Cujo, right?
Right.
It's not like I'm scared of the hallway.
or of copycats.
Or of, like, some snake lady eating me or something, right? Like,
right.
But this movie is so freaky with the way it, I also think of all, when we first did this month, when you first said what the phobias were, the only one that didn't surprise me as a top five is this one. You know, as a fear of heights, I'm pretty sure it's a universal, like, that's why the people in this movie seem so fucked up to us, is that they're like exceptions to a pretty universal rule of human nature, which is to be
to be scared. Yeah.
There's a reason why large heights give us a feeling of being unnerved. Like,
is it because we don't have wings?
Well, it's because our ancestors who weren't scared of heights fell and they didn't reproduce.
Yeah.
So, you know, like it's a trait selected for, and it's deep, deep, deep in our, you know, nervous system. It's completely pre-rational. It's not even irrational, Alex. It's
Isaac.
Yeah.
We've had a fourth person this whole time. Isaac, would you like to chime in? Sorry, we haven't thrown to you.
Isaac is my almost corporeal demon.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there has been a shadowy blur behind you that's getting sharper week after week.
I didn't want to call him Toby because that's too obvious. You know?
Sure, yeah.
You know, like the fear of heights, I call it a pre-rational survival technique, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so there were so many parts of this movie where I'm just like, fuck this, fuck off, move, fuck. It's like, you know, the movie's doing its job when it induces, like, really, that's the point of this movie, is the feeling it induces in the audience watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And the camera work was like, I paused this movie in the middle of it to be like, how the fuck are they filming these shots? But I also read, and I don't think this will like take away from the feeling of the movie, but they built the most of the shots of the top part, the very tallest part of the tower, they actually built on top of a mountain.
Oh,
so
okay.
So the 200-foot section was actually only 200 feet for when they were filming it. Mm-hmm. And then they just you know, they did some CGI shots for like the full thing probably, and then right, also yeah. like if you were to watch this movie again, which is like not recommended based on how it makes you feel, a lot of the shots you can see are angled in such a way that you are making it seem like you're looking, because it's like on top of a mountain, and then a lot of shots show the valley underneath the mountain right, without yeah. showing the mountain itself that they're on. So because I was thinking at first, like, how the fuck are they filming this way up in the sky? And, like, they must have had safety harnesses on the actresses oh, yeah. that also yeah. got CGI wiped, whatever, right? I'm sure some of the budget went to that. But anyway, mm-hmm. so, like, the cinematic feel of this movie is quite an achievement. I was really impressed with, because not many movies, I pause halfway through, but how are they filming this, you know? So that's, like, the positive, but everything else about this movie was kind of shitty, like...
The script itself was kind of meh.
I guess for movies that are so based in reality, it's more of a sin to be absurdist. Like, every single bolt on this ladder is broken. Every single one.
It's on this.
The well, you know why? It's because Hunter was a piece of shit and was jumping on it.
Yeah. We're talking about Hunter.
Like, but, bit, like, yeah. okay, look, I am not an extreme climber, okay? I have right. no expertise in this field. And yet, even I would think, thing one, check the bolts on the ladders before I climb it. That would be the first fucking thing I would check. And these two girls are, like, experienced climbers. Mm-hmm. And they've got, obviously, a skill set and an aptitude for this. And they don't check the thing that they're climbing to see if it's safe to climb. Like, I just,
you know, fly the drone up, like fly the drone up, give it a pass just to have a check.
it's honestly unforgivable in terms of like what an oversight that is for anything. And like just shit like mm-hmm. that feels like an unforced error in a movie. Like there's got to be another way to write in how they get stuck up there than just the dumbest fucking way they could possibly have gotten stuck up there.
Just by like you know? Being shitty. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It blows my mind that these kind of movies can get made where it's just, and anyway, like, yeah, the acting is subpar. I also found it weird how much they were kind of nonplussed by their situation for a lot of the time. They're just kind of like, oh, someone will rescue us. I was like, are you not aware of the situation you're in right now?
It'll be fine. Well, yeah.
So like the story is absurd. The decision-making is inscrutable. Honestly, for how experienced these two climbers are to get stuck in this situation, it's mm-hmm. just straight up so they have a movie. The survival stuff is tense, and you definitely feel it, and that's the good part of the movie again, is all of that. And actually, the beginning of this movie is like almost a straight up ripoff of the movie Vertical Limit with Chris O'Donnell from like the the late 90s. I don't know if you remember that movie, but
no,
it's like
me.
It's like a mountain climbing movie.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning of that movie, he's climbing with his sister and their dad falls, you know, they're like climbing one of those big rocks in like Arizona or Utah or something.
El Capitan or something.
Yeah. He's got this trauma baggage. Also, okay, the kind of like thesis of this film is, you know, don't be afraid to live. And just like, what?
Well, now I am afraid to live.
What a unbelievably sanguine, empty platitude. Of a insight for what this movie is doing.
The full quote is, if you're scared of dying, don't be afraid to live, which is the most... my question to you is, where do we think all three of these people had this tattooed in script on their body? Because it's that kind yeah. of like message, you know, 20-something, mm-hmm. I'm going to live forever, nothing's going to happen to me sort of mentality that they really embody in this one.
Yeah. So honestly, this movie, I'm pretty ambivalent about. And I mean that not like, I'm like actively ambivalent about, not passively, because I think the good parts are really good and the rest of it is really bad. And then, of course, the two leads are extremely attractive. That's not an accident either, right?
No, like, yeah, right?
Like the movie's like, well, they got to be hot because they're going to be on screen way longer than they need to be.
Yeah.
So that was all right.
I wanted to circle back to the point you made about the fear of falling and how that's universal to really, I guess, add another bolt to this ladder to strengthen it a bit more.
Somebody should have.
But this is me using my college education that I'm getting to good work already. So there you go, Mom. Tuition well spent. But
there you go, Mom.
there is a reflex that humans have when they're first born that disappears by about 3 months of age called the Moro reflex. And it, if you take an infant and you have to support it, obviously, but if you like move it backwards, like if you're holding it and you move it backwards, all their arms and legs open up wide and then they close back in. It's like an involuntary thing.
Mm.
They speculate that it's like evolutionary, where if you were a primate holding onto a tree branch or something and you fall, the instinct is to just like reach out and grab anything to stop you from falling. And so when you say like the ancestors we had that weren't afraid of falling just did, you know, it feels like this is something that evolved so we could stay in the trees and be safe. Yeah. And then once we went on the ground, it just sort of hung around, because you mentioned the best parts of this movie are the tension building, climbing up a very high, rickety piece of iron in. Yeah, they had harnesses and they had a piece of rope, but Hunter was climbing in Converse tennis shoes and had her backpack on one shoulder like she was in the eighth grade and didn't want to look like a nerd for wearing her backpack properly. And it was just, it just heightened up the tension to 11. And every time they were climbing on something, it was just like, oh no, oh no, oh no. And I think it's also built in because we know that the movie's called Fall. They're not going to like get down no problem and be like, aren't you glad we did this trip in September? Autumn? Great. That's why the movie was called that. So like you knew something bad was going to happen. And so every time they're doing something where the already sky high danger is even ratcheted up a bit more, you're like, oh no, is this where they fall? Is this the part where they do the fall? So like until the way the movie's plotted out, like drawing out the tension for when the ordeal starts in full, when they're trapped up there, I'm nervous every time because I'm like wondering it's going to happen. When's this fall going to happen? When is it going to be? Is it going to be now? No, it wasn't now. And that's something that I think the best tense movies do really well only on a first watch, because if we were to go back and watch this again, you know that there's no danger to the characters until they get to that that outside section, and so you're not worried about
unless it. Like you accidentally take a look at the runtime left, and then you're like, well, they're not gonna fall yet.
Yeah, not gonna fall yet. But it's the same way like with Paranormal Activity, where the first time you watch it, you don't know if the empty room is gonna stay empty for the whole time, and so it could be a demon. But like if you go back and watch it, you're like, well, nothing happens in this scene or this scene or this scene. So you know, it's one of those like one and done things. That's what I say. I said that once.
Mm-hmm. Also, there was another scene that just kind of blew my mind when the two guys see them up there and then they just steal their car. I was like, those guys are straight up psychopaths.
Insane.
Not even, like, fine, steal the car, whatever. At least do an anonymous call into 911 to say that there's two people stuck up there. Like, you, like, literally hard to think of any less you could do to save someone's life. And they just, all they do, like, I can't, like, even people, like, criminals would still have, like, some conscience around that, you know?
Just the most antisocial personality you could find is who they're
watching. And then two of them.
Yeah.
Two of them. And I can't, again, it's those kind of things. And these things bother me more in movies that are set in reality than ones with, like, a supernatural dimension to them.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just so obviously a plot point as opposed to something natural that is good storytelling.
Right.
You know? Like,
did this movie not have supernatural plot points, though?
What?
What? I think so.
Wasn't it supernatural?
Jeffrey Dean Morgan was in it. He was in Supernatural.
No. Like, it was a ghost.
Oh, right. No, oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, that was a hallucination. Also, yeah, I was going to say, you think you're in enough trouble. If you start hallucinating at the top of a TV tower, you're in big trouble.
Who's to say hallucinations aren't just ghosts manifesting themselves?
Pretty much every scientist ever.
Okay. I guess we'll put an end to that one.
I mean, yeah, I'm open to it. Your trauma manifesting. Looks like Luke has frozen for me, but I think we'll just keep going. Yeah, he's frozen. Can you see him moving, Alex?
No.
No? Oh, oh, here he's back.
Bye, Luke.
Bye, Luke.
He was so displeased by my idea that he just left.
Yeah, I'm having none of that. I'm hard-nosed today because this movie got under my skin a little bit, so I'm not keeping anything. I'm gonna be impolitic.
Right, you're just gonna jump off as soon as you say something you don't agree with. Like, I'm out of here.
like it's just like this is a I think a totally legit criticism of any movie, and this movie is included, where it's just okay, this is subpar storytelling because it is so patently obvious that the things happening in the movie are to, in some sense, justify this pre-existing runtime of a movie that you have. Like, you're just stretching this out. You're making it longer. You're giving another thing. There's like a kind of segment of this movie, which is kind of like a MacGyver type thing, right? Like, they're trying to figure out different ways to get down. Mm-hmm. And there's like three or four or five of them. And there's like foreshadowing. And fine, that's not terrible. The foreshadowing parts weren't terrible. But like, all of these things that they're trying, that one should have worked. Right? Like, there's no real reason in the world why those two guys wouldn't call to save them.
Yeah.
Right?
Except for the movie plot reason.
Except for the movie plot point. And so, again, this word that we love in this, the verisimilitude of this film to real life was so badly lacking that it just rips you out of it. You know?
Well,
just
and
tears you down, if you will.
That's not even the worst. I mean, that is the worst example of like a circumstance
most unethical.
happening to keep them up there. But like the movie is filled with that from the very start. You know, like it starts with these three people climbing, and it's Hunter, and I don't know who the other girl's name is. Alex?
No. Becky?
Becky, thank you.
And Dan. The guy who played Dan, wasn't he Chad from the new Scream movies?
That's right. He is Mason Gooding. He's Cuba Gooding Jr.'s son, and he plays...
Oh, really?
Yeah. He plays Chad in 5 and 6 Scream. And maybe in 7 Scream? Who knows? No spoilers. But, yeah, so he's up there. Becky and Dan are married, and they're doing a group climb up some big rock face at the start. A bird flies out and scares Dan, and he falls, and then the rope lets go, and he's dead. And so that whole contrived to have her be like, I haven't climbed in a whole year, and we got to get you out of your rut, and you know, you're drinking yourself to death, I'm worried about you, like all that is very okay. Here is the plot point that says Hunter is going to reach out to her to try to get her over her grief, which is like, grief takes time. It hasn't even been a whole year.
I feel like there's steps to this, you know, like, right. You know, she got traumatized from her husband falling off a mountain while they're climbing. So instead of easing yourself into it, we're going to climb this 2000 foot tall TV tower that is old and rusty.
Climb a tree in your yard to start.
I got into a car accident and I'm afraid of vehicles and I don't really want to, I haven't ridden in a car in a while. So the first thing I'm going to do is, sit in an F1 car, you know, like. I don't fucking understand. Like, what is the process of this kind of thing? Is it like all in? Is that it? Like, if I don't do this, I will die. I just didn't make sense to me.
Hunter is an inscrutable person. Like, this is just, I look at her and I'm like, there is nothing about you that I get.
Well, and like her whole thing, like they sort of shoehorn in this love triangle thing, which like I could see coming a mile away when you know Dan
also
is
so
like
stupid.
He's lying so there stupid. And he says, oh, he can't say I love you. So he says 1, 4, 3. He's spelling out the like number of letters in the words. Oh, wouldn't you know it? Hunter's got that tattooed on her ankle. So Chad and...
Which is a bit brazen for a 4-month fling that didn't mean anything until it did. You know, like...
it meant everything, Luke.
Yeah, I know. But it's just like, you don't think your best friend might see that one day? You tattooed it on your body.
Yeah. And it's just, it's so... contrived to stoke the drama between these two friends when it's like, okay, I would have liked it if they had done more with how Hunter was grieving, because Becky is grieving in the way that's like, I'm wallowing, I'm drinking, I'm not doing the things I love, whereas Hunter is like, I'm gonna do everything that I was afraid of and just sort of like live life like I'm already on borrowed time. And maybe that's borne out in their personality, because right at the very start she's free soloing up the same route that the Becky and Dan are doing, where they're roped in. And so it's like, oh, Hunter's a bit more devil may care, and now she's a YouTuber who does like death defying stunts and whatever. And so it's like, okay,
what'd they call her? Big D?
Big D. Danger D.
So, Danger D, sorry.
A connection from Deborah Logan. She's probably Danger Dan, you know, again.
Yeah, honestly, everything about Hunter was just like, I had to get over it, because it was just, you're not even unlikable. You're like unintelligible.
Yeah.
You know, like you're obsessed with the, I think that the movie's trying to make some point about obsession with social media and that, but it's like so on the nose that it's not, There's nothing subtle about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, she's obsessed. Like, it's like she's got this otherwise philosophy of being really, like, deep and living well, but she's so obsessed with the superficial parts of all of it. And she kind of looks like a Barbie, which is an interesting casting choice for someone who's so athletic and has this prowess with climbing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that was fine, too. It was a good kind of, like, exploding a typecast. But, like, everything she said and did in this movie was stupider, dumber, meaner, shallower, and incomprehensibler than it needed to be.
Yeah, and it's because, like, she is trying to have Becky grieve the way she has been grieving, which is not how grief works. It looks different for everyone. And I did appreciate that. I don't know, maybe it was clumsily done in retrospect, but at least, like, she seemed to be aware, where she was like, yeah, I'm wearing this massive push-up bra because it gets more clicks and it supports my lifestyle, and, like, whatever, I'm all for that. But, you know, do what you need to do if you're a content creator and that is paying your bills, good for you, great. But yeah, she's just like, she's so not listening to her friend. And because they do this massive time jump where they're, you know, they're like, oh, you've been so distant, we don't get to see any of the other stuff that she might have tried. So in a generous interpretation of this movie script, maybe she has tried to say, well, Hunter or Becky, let's go climb a tree, or let's go to an indoor rock wall, or let's go. And, you know, now she's just fed up with trying, and she's like, okay, I'm pulling out the big guns, we're not taking no for an answer. But we don't get to see any of that, so we have to speculate. And it's like, okay, what we do see is her being annoying.
I think I got it.
You got it.
Unsurprisingly, this movie, obviously you need to name drop of Aristotle for this film. So Hunter confuses recklessness with bravery, you know. Mm-hmm. she confuses being absolutely unbridledly reckless with her and Becky's life as mm-hmm. them living to the fullest. And, like, that's the reason I said Aristotle, is that he talked about how a virtue is actually halfway between two vices, not the opposite of a vice. Like, courage is actually halfway between recklessness and cowardice.
Mm-hmm.
So, because, like, you could have done this entire climb safely if you wanted. Right? Like, every reason they're in the predicament they're in is because they're just, like, consciously shooting the tennis ball into the net.
Yeah.
Like, they're just like, they tied their shoes together and they're using a pickleball racket and a bowling ball to play tennis. Like, it's just I can't.
Sounds fun.
This is what I mean when these movies are just, they grind on me, because it's like, okay, well, the movie's obviously showing us that the ladders are shaky and unsafe. Mm-hmm. And not only have they not checked, it's shown in Becky's character that she would check. And she's not. Right?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's flouting its own rules that it's set for its character. It's rubbing absurdity in our face with, like, and then 200 feet of ladder all just fall? There isn't one set. Like, I just, it's too much. Well, you might think, why don't we bring 200 feet of rope? Because that's how big that section is.
Yeah,
and if
they
we
make
need rope, we want to be able to the whole way. They bring a rope. It's just not long enough.
They make, they make a lot of silly mistakes. They don't prep it. If they wanted to do this thing where they're releasing Dan's ashes, there's a way to do that with harnesses and telling people and safety gear and check-in points. Like, it's all so flouting of, like, safe climbing regulations that it boggles the mind.
Yeah, you're supposed to tell somebody that you're going somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right? And they just go to the motel.
I forgot they don't follow rules in this one.
No, they don't.
It boggles the mind.
But yeah, like, we can talk about their characters till all our faces turn blue, but that's, I think, a little bit...
It's also not the point of the movie.
So, okay, so there's a very large twist in this movie, a very big spoiler in this movie, and we usually preface things with spoilers, and I think, honestly, that this twist is one that, if you are interested in watching it, you should watch the movie before seeing this, because I didn't see this twist coming, and I think it paid off better. Do you agree with me before we get into what the twist
was? Do you know why you didn't see this twist coming?
Because it wasn't in the trailer?
Because it's 2022, okay? That trope was, like, 20 years ago.
Mm, that's true.
Or 18 years ago? I don't know. I feel like it was so overused that you bring it back when no one expects it, and you're like, yeah, okay, it got me.
Did it get you, Alex?
Yeah, it did get me.
It got me. Did it get you, Luke? Or did you see it coming?
Well, I think it got my conscious mind, but it didn't get my subconscious mind. Because sure. I remember when she's pulling Hunter back up, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, it's floating around in my mind. And maybe this is like, you know, revisionist history of thinking about it. But it's like, Hunter's a little bit bigger than Becky.
That's weird.
Like, how is she doing this? You know, and then.
All right. Well, hang on. So officially, we're going to talk about the twist of this movie. So if you haven't seen it, this is your last chance. We're going into it. So Luke, finish your point and then tell us what the twist is.
Well, I mean, I guess it'll make more sense to say what the twist is that...
yeah, please say the twist.
Hunter dies a little bit earlier in the movie than we think she does. And then there's about a 20-minute section where Hunter's back, but it turns out it's actually Becky hallucinating her presence, which is why Becky actually does everything from that point on, even though Hunter had done most of the stuff before that, which makes
sense. But it's because Hunter hurt her hand. She can't climb anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Whatever.
Okay, so there we go. Twist revealed.
But also, so like, I think one of the reasons I subconsciously knew that it couldn't possibly be real is that I just rolled my eyes so hard when she pulled Hunter back up. I was just like, this is another stupid thing in this movie where, how did she do this? Like, you're just...
Well, she didn't. That's the thing. She didn't.
I know. That's what I mean. Like, that's... So it's like I was answering my own rhetorical question with a real answer. Subconsciously. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
And so then once it was revealed she was actually lying down there dead, it's like, well, isn't that convenient that she landed on the satellite and didn't fall all the way down? That's going to come back. Mm-hmm. But then also I was like, okay, yeah, all right. That makes sense. It wasn't the worst part of this movie.
No, it wasn't. And like, I realized that something was off when there's a scene where she climbs the like antenna part to, in what I have to imagine is completely made up and would not work in real life, but she Becky climbs the like post where the aviation warning light is on top to charge the drone that doesn't have enough batteries. We'll get into it. And then like as she's working her way up, the bag falls and she shouts down to Hunter and she's like, Hunter, why don't you catch the bag? And all Hunter says is and then they're distracted by something else. So I was just like, why would Hunter? That's so weird. Hunter's not acting like she normally was. And that, in retrospect, that is a clue that there is no Hunter. There hasn't been a Hunter since Hunter went down to retrieve the bag in the first place and wasn't able to jump back onto it. But yeah, but I was just like, this is so weird. What is going on in this movie? Did I miss a part of it? Are they still fighting? And then, it was revealed. So I was surprised at the twist that Hunter dies, and then the way they get the signal out is to put the one remaining phone in the one remaining shoe, and then put that shoe inside of Hunter's body that's been conveniently ripped open by vultures.
Star Wars.
Yeah, this will keep the phone warm until she could get the shelter built, and then she just pushes her off and hopes that the phone sends the message before exploding into a million pieces.
See. As absurd as that solution was, and as the conclusion of this movie was, at that point, you're like, what else are you going to do, right? Yeah. Because I think that was the one of my bigger problems with this movie was the length of it, and the length of it was artificially inflated by every solution they have not working, right? And they had to do it multiple times.
Right.
So there's really, like, no other problem solved. Like, how if we're thinking realistically, how else are you really going to get out of this situation?
Yeah.
You need to call for help. And how do you call for help? You have a cell phone and you have flare. So it's really, like, that's it. So they had all these solutions that just didn't work, and they didn't work to make the movie longer, you know? Mm-hmm. So the first one was...
They tried to lower the phone on the rope.
Yeah, to get a signal. That didn't work. They tried to get the guy's attention. That didn't work. They got the guy's attention with the flare, but then the truck got stolen. They flew the drone out, but the drone was out of power, so they had to bring the drone back and charge it up there on with, like, the little... I don't even know how that works. Like, don't fucking do this, kids.
Yeah.
Like, don't stick your electronics in a light bulb plug. Don't do that.
No.
And then they finally got it charged, so let's send the note again. Oh, no, it got hit by a truck. Like,
Jesus, yeah. Yeah. Fucking same driver from Pet Sematary.
Yeah, and then, that's like, that road. Well, that road of Pet Sematary into it's the extended universe.
Yeah. Yeah, and then if we back it up, like, they dropped Hunter's phone in a shoe, and that didn't work because, you know, the phone probably broke. So now, like, they have to revisit. Like, they revisited so many things. Mm-hmm. Like, getting the guy's attention with the shoe didn't work, so they had to get them with the flare. Flying the drone out the first time didn't work, so they charge it and fly the drone out again and didn't work.
Yeah.
Dropping the phone in a shoe didn't work, so now they have to drop the shoe in a... or drop the phone in a shoe in a body, and mm-hmm. that works. So it's just like... it just felt long for the sake of being long, right? Yeah,
it's three problems that they have to try to solve two times each to make it six problems, yeah.
If you're going to go to the extent of having an emergency little shelf at the top of this tower, why only put one flare? Why not put, like, five?
Because the builders of the tower did not think two dumbasses would climb up to the top without any safety equipment and without any way or without telling anybody that they'd be going up there.
Yeah, but if you think anyone's up there, why have it on just one flare? I don't know. How about this? Why not a satellite phone with batteries? Just batteries sitting up there.
I think, like, because it was, like, the reason in universe for it was because it was decommissioned, and, you know, there was somebody that put a sign that said danger, no trespassing, risk of death, and they're like, that's good enough for us. So, I mean, yeah, it's like, why not? Because movie is why. Because the movie needs it to be. And, you know, it's not like wilderness hiking where they have, you know, some places in national parks have, like, off-trail cabins and shelters that aren't locked specifically for people who get lost if they can find them. And they have, like, provisions and stuff just in case. This is not a place where people are going to be recreationally doing adventuring stuff. So they just... assume if you go up there, it's your own liability. But again, Becky had proven that before, she would have taken that into consideration, and they didn't. So, whatever. And especially with like the whole reason where they're like, oh, we'll just climb up and down. We'll be back by lunch. We don't need any food. We don't need more than one water bottle. Like, it's fine. And you're like, hubris. Hubris gets you every time.
Always the Greeks.
See, I'd understand that. I'd understand that if you're like, hey, we're going to go to the grocery store and, you know, maybe we'll walk there. Should we bring some food? Nah, one water bottle's good. We'll be back by lunch. I understand that, but you're fucking climbing a tower.
Store. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring a granola bar.
Again, Hunter is inscrutable.
Yeah. Like,
her decision-making process is, it's like she's an alien.
Yeah.
This movie is Why Would You Do That? The movie.
One of my big takeaways of this movie was that it's a subtle plea for clothing designers to put pockets in women's clothing, because the amount of times they're just like holding their phone with nowhere to put it, nowhere to slide it in. It's like, put pockets in women's clothing. It's something that people need. They could have really used a pocket or two, but
no. Why is that not a thing?
Misogyny, probably. I think there's a reason that's historically, you know, been bad for women and means to control them, but yeah, it's insane. Put pockets in.
It seems like it's functional.
Yeah, it's starting to change, but it's still very, like, there's a long way to go. Like, why do baby clothes need full pockets, but women's clothes don't? Come on.
Anyway. Baby clothes have pockets?
Yeah, some little baby clothes have full ass pockets in, like, little,
you know,
tiny baby jeans.
Where else can you keep your snacks?
Right? Sorry, well, I mean, all the clothing choices and whatnot, again, are just facilitating the fact that the movie cast two extremely attractive women in their 20s. Like, that was why everything was, like, the shorts, the tight pants, like, the kind of...
it's eye candy.
Very, very loose plot reasons for them to have to take their shirts off or whatever, right? Like, it's just...
yeah.
She hurt her leg and needed to wrap it up.
And when you consider the kind of acting we do get in this movie, there's lots of movies that do this. This movie didn't cast these two for their brains, I would say, in these roles.
It was definitely a lot of eye candy being like, hey, we want people to come to this movie, so we know what demographic we're after, and they'll come. Give money.
What's the demographic? Dumbasses?
Dumbasses, yeah.
Wow, they climbed up this thing without any safety or knowledge of telling people. That's so relatable to my life.
That's
I
so
want to watch this movie now.
No, you know. And then you can kind of be like, well, if I was going to climb an abandoned TV tower in the middle of the desert, I would simply tell somebody first. Which is, again, like you said earlier, Alex, they tried to be 127 hours, which, you know, James Franco... he does that whole thing. He just, like, doesn't answer his phone, doesn't tell anyone where he is, and has to learn a lesson about relying on other people. And all it did was cost him an arm.
But not a leg.
Maybe they don't have friends.
Well, I feel like...
but
Becky,
she did have a dad, so...
pushed people away. Her dad is trying. I was ready for, you know, a bad horror movie dad, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan actually looked like he was, he cared, he was patient, he's really trying to connect with his daughter who's suffered this loss, he's understanding, and she's really just pushing away everybody because her partner died, and it's sad and devastating, and she probably needed therapy more than she needed to go out climbing with Hunter.
Yeah. It's true.
So the movie, the end of this movie, the last act of this movie, which ironically felt like it was too short, you know, once she gets finished golleming a vulture, you know, she eats it for strength, just raw dogs this whole bird. So yeah. Gross. And then can get down to the satellite dish somehow, does the whole thing.
Well,
where
conveniently,
she...
it was only 52 feet down, and the rope was 50 feet. So right. There's that extra 2 feet of tension where she gets off the rope and has to fall onto it. And yeah. look, we can't, what we can say about this tower, the bolts in the satellites were a little stronger than in the ladder.
Right?
Those ones, you want to keep those on. We want those TV.
The amount of force that has landed on that dish.
So many.
They're just walking enough on to the like, ladder. In it.
Was probably yeah. enough to like knock a young elephant unconscious.
Right?
But somehow it stayed, it was... absurd.
I wanted to see a flashback to them building the tower and a guy like ratcheting the satellite dish on and goes like, yep, that'll take the weight of 2 full-grown people if it ever needs to. It's time to go.
Not and just two full-grown people. The 2 full-grown people that have dropped at a height of like...
right.
Like, because there's four, like what, force? There's force involved?
Yeah. There's gravity.
Some kind of physics thing.
Acceleration, whatever.
Although I have to say, I'm getting uncomfortable even just talking about this shit, thinking about what it was like in a movie, because it's so
nerve-wracking. It does such a good job of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was scary, yeah.
But to get back to my point about like that last act, it just kind of is like she gets to the satellite dish somehow, and then she pushes Hunter off with the phone inside, and then cut forward, she's down. And you're like, what?
They didn't have the budget for the rescue part, you know?
I kind of wanted to see a little bit more, like, okay, did she make it down to the internal ladder somehow? Did she anything? But no, it was just...
They probably just helicoptered her down, right?
I guess so, yeah. Just helicoptered her. But they lowered the rope and said, okay, but you're going to have to jump for it. And if you grab it, we'll pull you up. Yeah.
Ugh. God, I hated this movie. How it made me feel.
Yeah,
it
I mean,
did such a good job. Honestly, like this movie, probably maybe more than any movie we've done on this whole podcast. Really, I was manifesting physical symptoms of discomfort.
Yeah,
watching it,
just sweaty, tense, nervous. There was a point in this movie, I can't remember where it was. I think it was when they were doing their like lower her by holding her onto her hand, and then they're filming her and doing their shots.
Yeah, yeah.
I got up off of the couch and had to like walk away into the kitchen because I was just like, I can't. Like my body would not let me sit in that scene. And I've seen
that was
some
the most.
Shit. Yeah.
Why in the why would you do that movie? That was the most why would you do that scene.
Well, the whole thing is like, yeah, we're here to honor Dan, but then you're going like way too far. We don't need to hang off. We don't need to be hanging off of a radio tower by one hand or zero hands. We don't.
This movie
simply
does
do not.
nothing for the credibility of the extreme climber community. I'll tell you that. Like, they just seem fucking stupid.
I know that there are people who do extreme climbing and they do take precautions, but Alex Honnold.
But I bet there's also some people that don't.
Yeah. Which is, you know, that unique.
Not okay. No, no, it's not okay, Billy.
No, okay.
I'm not going to, we're not, it's not okay.
It's not okay. I understand. No, I agree with you. It's not okay. But it does buy into the sense of unique invulnerability that people have when they're in their 20s, where they're like, bad things happen to someone else, not to me, the main character. So it feels like Hunter had main character syndrome the whole time. And just simply did not factor in that a fall could result in the end of her life. And it did. So be careful out there. Take appropriate risks, folks. Appropriate risks. Climbing a defunct radio or TV tower, not an appropriate risk. Not even for the legs. Well, that PSA aside, I think, have we got any final thoughts on this one?
I guess when you're in a life or death situation, you can't really get like incredibly upset at someone else, right?
Right.
Because, like, she found out that there was that affair happening, and I feel like you'd get angrier, but you're really just stuck there with that person, so, like, what can you do? She showed a lot of self-restraint.
I was kind of blown away at how much restraint they showed about their situation in general. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, again, that didn't jive at all with their lack of precautions that they took. Where they're like, oh, we're stuck up here. Well, we'll figure it out.
Yeah,
we'll just hang out. Right. We'll just, like, have a nap.
Easy game. Yeah.
It's like, I just didn't relate to them at all in any of this. Like, they were way more calm in moments that should have been terrifying and way too stupid in moments that were so easy to not be stupid in. Yeah. So I was like, I don't get you. I just don't get you, too. But you know what? We might want to, I don't know, just spend a moment on the true achievement of this movie, which is its cinematography. Like, I was blown away at how good it was.
And my palms are sweaty and like thinking about all the heights.
It
parts,
keeps,
you know?
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
And once I knew that they actually built the top section on a mountain and it was only 200 feet and they were actually like not that high up in.
I mean, 200 feet is still pretty high.
Well, it's high. It's high up, but it's not 2,000 feet. Like, it's,
sure, yeah,
it's a different scale in terms of like how challenging the filming would be. But even still, like the way that they angle it and the way that they have these, because like there's a bunch of shots where they're like the camera's a good 20, 25 feet off the side of the thing, and you're like, how the f-? So it's like, I guess that like. They didn't use helicopters, I don't think, really. Like, it didn't feel like there were helicopters.
I mean,
shots.
Drones are amazing for filming. Like, drones are, like, they've really come a long way in the last, like, even 5 years for filming. And if they had a big enough drone to mount an IMAX camera on it or shoot an IMAX, like, yeah, that's an amazing achievement.
Like, it would have been pretty impossible to make this movie without drones.
It would be green screen hell if they tried to do it without drones. You know, it'd just be, and there were some points where you could kind of see, oh, this is maybe shot against a green screen, but.
Well, a lot of the, like, straight down shots where you, like, can see it straight down, and you're like, yeah, that's not a real land.
there's just crash mats, like, 15 feet below you.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but, like, I mean, incredible and very beautiful to look at. If it wasn't so stressful, I think it would be good.
Yeah.
I don't know. That shithole desert did not look very beautiful to me, but, you know,
I mean,
beauty
once
is in
you
the
got
eye of the
high
beholder.
Enough up to see the landscape, it was pretty cool.
It looked beautiful in the way that, like, yeah, it wasn't like a lush tropical rainforest. There was this severe, stark kind of beauty of nature that really, you know, hit me.
I did like the shot where you see the storm in the distance. That was really cool.
Yeah.
There were a few parts of it that it reminded me of scenes from Grand Theft Auto San Andreas when CJ, like, can get into a plane or a helicopter and just fly way up and fly around the desert. And you're like, oh, yeah, okay.
All you had to do was follow the damn train, CJ.
That's right.
Yeah, CJ, come on. I like that there was a little bit of Jesse Pinkman about Becky at the start of this movie where she's repeatedly calling Dan's phone number until the voicemail box fills up. And I was like, no, don't keep calling the number. It's going to definitely cut off and you'll hear an automated message voice. And that'll be real sad. And yep, it's real sad. Alex, you got any final thoughts that we didn't mention?
No, not really. Like, yeah, ending was so rushed for how long this movie felt. But, you know, it got the point across. The point of the movie was being scared of the moment of being high up and not getting down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know?
I would have traded one or two shots of her at nighttime watching full videos on her phone. Don't even get me started on the battery life of this phone. I would have traded that for a little bit more explanation of how she got down, like, happily. So
I mean, yeah, I feel like it's safe to assume a helicopter just got her.
All right. or a drone, a big drone.
Yeah, a big drone. Like, the heights part, I don't know. Like, I'm definitely queasy at heights. Like, even when I'm in apartment buildings, I don't like it. So, this movie fucking plugged into every bit of that fear in me.
You're a man built to stay on the ground, hey?
That's for sure.
That's right. Would you? What about the descent? Would you go underground? Or are you like, earth surface, that's it for me?
I mean, yeah, I'm less scared of going underground than going up tall, big ground. Or however you said it.
Up tall, big ground.
But, you know, I mean, yeah, there's a moment where claustrophobia would also be something I'm not into. There's a few, like, some of those scenes in, like, As Above, So Below, or in The Descent. Yep. I'm just like, nope, don't like that.
Don't like it.
Or even in The Grinch, when The Grinch is climbing down the chimney and for some reason he just kind of goes upside down, stuck, and then just totally gets unstuck again. It's like, even though that's physically impossible, I don't like that. I'm telling you, I don't like uncanny shit.
You don't like uncanny shit. Okay, well, how about scary shit? Have you got a scariest part of this movie?
I do.
Let's hear it.
It's the entire part where they're climbing up. And then I would say probably the scariest part out of all that is when fucking Hunter is jumping on the ladder and making it rattle. And then just the way the camera like makes your stomach feel. The camera personified how my stomach felt. Mm-hmm. You know? It's just dropping and swaying and me no like.
Yeah.
Very scary.
Yeah, my scariest part was when Hunter is holding Becky by one arm over the edge of the platform and they're doing the like star pose. Look at us. It's I was just like, no. I think that I could be misremembering it. I probably am, but retroactively I'll say that was the part I got up and walked away from the TV screen because I was like, I cannot. What about you, Luke?
Another question. This just occurred to me.
Go for
this
it.
This is 2,000 feet up. If you get stuck, why wouldn't you bring parachutes? You could, like, that's totally high enough to jump off and parachute.
No preparation.
God damn it. You know, this movie is abidingly scary in terms of what it's doing to my nervous system. So, like, it's kind of hard to pick one scene over any other because it's just, like, the tension is so high the whole film. Mm-hmm. But probably the one where I was just like, holy fuck, I hate this, is when Hunter's jumping off the satellite to catch the rope. I was like, how was that needed?
Yeah.
Like, so dumb. Rope is just... put it above her.
Becky, move the rope over. You tied it to a cylindrical thing. You can jiggle it around. Yeah.
I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah. Or when she has to hook the backpack on with the selfie stick. I'm just like, nah, man. don't like it. I'm all sweaty and it's not because this room is hot. So I think we should move into the rating of this one. I think maybe the runtime of this movie is a testament to how still scary. We don't want to talk about heights anymore. So we're wrapping it up. But I think we're going to rate this out of internal shoes because that's all I got. So I'm going to stick with 3 out of 5. It gained a lot of points for the cinematography. It gained a ton for the way it made me feel, but it loses a whole bunch on the performances and the decision making of the main cast. So 3 out of 5 internal shoes for me for Fall. Luke, you go next.
Well, I think the cinematography is basically like a 4 out of 5, and the rest of the movie is like a 0 out of 5. So I'm going to give it a 2 out of 5 internal shoes because it just, I didn't hate watching this movie other than like the tension. Like it clearly wasn't terrible that, you know, Hunter and Becky were quite attractive. Like, that just was so obviously part of it that I was like, okay, whatever. I can handle all of this. And then once they were in peril, I kind of liked how they were trying to figure out how to get out of it, even if it was so plot pointed. They're doing their best at that point. But the rest of it is just, it's inexcusable how stupid the decisions were. And the lack of preparation. So 2 out of 5.
Absolutely. 2 out of 5 from Luke. Alex, your rating, please.
Yeah, everything outside of the fear part of this movie was just absurd and too long. But I think this movie really got to me with the acrophobia part. Like, heights is my biggest fear out of everything. And I haven't remembered being this genuinely afraid in a movie. That isn't really your typical horror movie. This, like, there's nothing really...
No.
Like, it's not a typical horror movie, right?
It's more like a survival movie, yeah.
Yeah, but I haven't been this afraid in so long. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm thinking about what I watched yesterday, and I'm still, like, I'm shaking and I'm sweating. So this one stuck with me specifically for those reasons. So even though everything else sucked, it did its job, and I'm going to give it 3.25 internal shoes out of 5.
There you go. Awesome.
Okay, well, sorry, another thought about how stupid the ending
was. Please, go ahead.
Sorry, this just occurred to me.
No, I want to hear it.
They make it a melodrama at the end, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Jeffrey Dean Morgan shows up, and he sees the body bag, and we know it's Hunter, but he doesn't. He's like, no! Yeah. And then he looks, and then Becky's like, hi, Dad! And you're just like, fuck off. Like, God damn it. Yeah. You make it like a Hallmark ending. It's just too much.
She decided she wants to live.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan doing his best Darth Vader Revenge of the Sith impersonation.
I know.
No.
This movie couldn't decide what it was.
No, it couldn't, and it was a little bit uneven and messy, but as far as making people nervous about heights, boy oh boy, it does that in spades. So.
Well, and that's why I think, even though, I mean, maybe this is the best movie of this month, I don't think so, but it's the most poignant to the phobia, the theme, I think,
yeah,
of the one that we've done. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, then, let's
also,
cheer some.
Sorry, one final thing.
Yeah. Just one more thing, Columbo.
So the movie poster, the movie poster, I'm looking at it. So it says fall. It's showing a shot of the tower with the ladder breaking. So the tag for the poster is "Fear reaches new heights. Fall, dropping soon." Who the fuck made this poster?
That's like a movie poster from the 80s. You know, like that's like a 80s style of how they would phrase it.
Yeah, that just reminds me of the two songs. They're singing songs at one point, like nursery rhymes. And the two they pick are Humpty Dumpty and Ring Around the Rosie, that both feature prominently the theme of falling. So it's like, oh, I guess when you're in that fear state, that's all you can come up with. But I don't know, Itsy Bitsy Spider, that one, that's all about triumph.
That's next week.
That is next week. But yeah, fear reaches new heights, dropping soon. Great, I love it. 10 out of 10. Alrighty, let's cheer something. I'd like to go first, if that's all right with y'all. My cheer this week is this past Friday, the job that I work at the LGBTQ Center, hosted its 7th annual Queer Prom. Queers in Space was the theme, and it was a wonderful evening hosting a very, you know, safe space for kiddos to come down and be who they are and just dance around and have a great time. It was so much fun. I got to dress up. I got to pull together a Miss Frizzle with a space dress costume. It was great. It was wonderful to see all the kids that I work with just like having so much fun in a climate that is kind of, not kind of, it's really shitty to be queer a lot of times if you look at the news. And so it was just nice to be around people who wanted to celebrate and have a good time. And the DJ played an amazing mix of prom songs, and it was mostly stuff I had heard of. I was afraid it was going to be all the music that kids were listening to, and I'd be like, I don't know what any of this is, but no, it was good 90s and 2000s dance music.
Any awesome. Star Wars costumes?
There was one kid that came dressed as Anakin in Revenge of the Sith, so had the scar, had the blue lightsaber, had like a cape with a big chain across the front. It was a great costume. One couple came dressed as Marty McFly and Doc Brown, which was great. It was very cool. Not really space theme, but time and space. So it was great. Yeah, it was so much fun. It was so much fun to get out there and dance around. And even though I'm sober now, it was another situation where the day after, because I was on my feet so much and moving around and helping out, that I felt like hungover yesterday. So I was like, I didn't even get drunk. And I
hungover on joy, am I right?
Hungover on joy. So that's my cheer. Yay, Queer Prom. Looking forward to the 8th annual one. Hopefully it's not 3 years between the 6th and 7th annual prom again, but we'll see. Yeah, it's our first prom post-pandemic. So it was good to get out there, and I think everyone really enjoyed it. Anyway, Luke, what are you cheering?
I'm cheering that I'm actually participating in this podcast notwithstanding, which would make it a quatrefecta, but I'm participating in a trifecta today. My kind of triathlon.
Okay, what you got?
Starting with trivia, sliding into an open mic night, ending with karaoke.
Oh, dang.
That's a great threesome.
That is my kind of threesome. Yeah.
Happy long weekend to you, Luke.
Yeah. No, it's just funny how serendipitously enough, trivia's on Sundays. Some friends who are hosting an open mic at their house in a studio that they have, and then Sunday's karaoke, and there's no work tomorrow. So.
Yeah. No dippity
friend
like
groups. That's right. That's
do
right.
I say?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I hope you have a lot of fun. That sounds great. Protect your vocal cords.
Oh, yes, for sure. Yeah. I always do.
All right. What are you cheering, Alex?
Sports playoffs have been happening. Games have been very entertaining and fun to watch. That's my cheer. And then we gotta live all summer without fun sports, you know?
Are you referring to basketball or hockey?
Both. They've been great games.
So what's the vibe like in Calgary that Matthew Tkachuk is just, like, lighting it up for Florida?
Well, I mean, the Flames fans everywhere are getting triggered.
Yeah.
I find it very amusing.
I think it is hilarious, like, you know.
Yeah.
Sports. Go sports.
Go sports.
Very, a little related, but unrelated, but it's just been announced that Craig Conroy is going to be the new GM for the Flames, which is awesome, because he was one of my favorite players growing up.
Yeah, he was a famous Flame. He was a big part of that 04 Cup run.
Even I recognize that name, and I am not a sports person, so even I was like, I know Craig Conroy, what do I know that name from? Thank you for filling in the blank that he was a hockey man.
No problem.
Alrighty. Well then, I will wrap up the show here by teasing y'all into what we're watching for the next episode of Nothing to Fear, the last week of May, and the...
Is it teasing if everyone already knows?
Yeah, probably. You can still tease someone even if they know. Last episode for Phobia Month, and last episode before the Nothing to Fear hiatus. Next week, we're going to be watching Arachnophobia from 1990, and oh boy, I can't wait. So tune in next week, and tell your friends to listen to the show. It's a good, fun time. I'll say goodbye, and I'll let Luke say goodbye if he so chooses.
Arrivederci.
Arrivederci. Very good, Aldo the Apache. Alex, say goodbye if you wish.
Say goodbye.
Say goodbye. Great, great, great. Remember, folks, they're just movies. There's nothing to fear.